Welcome to the Sales Lead Dog Podcast, hosted by CRM technology and sales process expert, Christopher Smith, talking with sales leaders that have separated themselves from the rest of the pack. Listen to find out how the best of the best achieve success with their team and CRM technology. And remember, unless you are the lead dog, the view never changes.
Welcome to Sales Lead Dog. Today I have joining me Christopher Tomesco. Christopher is the COO of Albert Weiss Air Conditioning Products. Christopher, welcome to Sales Lead Dog.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me on.
Hey, you bet. Chris, tell me a little bit about your current role in Albert Weiss.
Yeah, so I as the COO, I'm responsible for operations, both sales and order execution. And I get everything in between. We're a true small business. So I get involved in anything from insurance renegotiations, contract reviews, legal, HR, and then actively involved in our core business, which is working with our manufacturers, strengthen our relationships with our manufacturers, to go and sell product in our territory, which is New York and the five boroughs. Also responsible for offer management, right, which is to grow our offer into the territory, and thinking of new and creative ways to grow our business.
Yeah, it's a huge job. You have a lot on your plate.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's why we're having you on the podcast. So happy to have you here.
Thanks.
When you look back over your career, Chris, what are the three things that have really contributed and driven your success?
So I ultimately, I think back to when I was a kid, right? And I had a lot of coaches along the way, right? I played sports my entire life, but then even business coaches and kind of life coaches. And people have said things to me like, if you're going to get into something for work, make sure you love it and you're good at it, right? So thinking about answering that question, I've always had a competitive spirit, right? Whether it's I'm competing against somebody in school, to be number one in the class, right? Or just competing with myself, right? I used to work out a lot, right? What would my one rep max be on bench one week? I'm trying to do better next week. It's always trying to compete, right? So there's that competitive nature. I've always been inquisitive, right? Which is why I became an engineer. I ask questions. I ask a lot of questions. And some of them make people uncomfortable. People I've been told at the various different places that I worked at, you have like the challenger mentality, right? So, never be afraid to ask questions, but ask them at the right time, right? There's something to be said for a timeliness of asking questions. So be inquisitive, have a natural curiosity. The third thing is I'm a bit of an extrovert, right? And I have been my whole life, right? I'm not afraid to get up in front of a group or, address somebody. I've been a best man at a wedding so many times that, you get up there and extemporaneously give a speech. It's just something that comes natural to me. So that's what I guess kind of pushed me kind of the way I made it into the career path that I'm currently on. And the most exciting thing about it is I didn't think I would wind up in the position that I'm in now as COO. But I'm excited about where the career path's going to continue, because if I had to say one more thing, I have because I ask a lot of questions, I have just a zest for learning. I love to learn new things. And I love talking to people. So that's I think awesome. That's kind of what pushed me into sales.
Yeah. Where do you think the competitive streak in you comes from? Where's that originate?
I don't know. I don't know. I just, as a kid, I just didn't, I had an older brother, right? There's that, my older brother he's 2 years older than me. So, we're kind of around the same age. We'd play sports together, and you know, we kind of grew up together. And there was, you know, always that natural, healthy competition, right? Whether it was sports or, you know, whatever it was, we were, you know, who was going to get better grades, right? There's always that healthy competition, and that's what keeps, you know, people wanting to develop. You've seen this with some of like the greatest athletes, you know, in the world. You know, Magic Johnson, for instance, when he got sick, Larry Bird decided to retire because he had this very healthy obsession with Magic Johnson, and Magic had it with Larry. So, I'm not saying my brother and I were like Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, but I think it started there, and it's gotten, it's grown, right? It's grown.
So you're in college, you're studying engineering. Did you ever consider in any form or fashion a career in sales at that time?
No. So I went to Stevens Tech in Hoboken, New Jersey. And I was on track to be a chemical engineer. And I, you know, went on a bunch of, so I was part of their co-op program, right? So you do internships. And after my first year of schooling, I interviewed for a bunch of these internships, and I wasn't too enthused really about any of the job descriptions. It was, you know, and again, it might have suited someone else, but it didn't suit me, right? It was, you know, work in a lab and do research, and I, you know, wasn't too enthused about that. I wanted to go out and, you know, and do other things. So I changed my major, you know, and never looked back.
You and I had similar experiences. I was engineering, and I'm just like, man, this is not for me. You have to have a path. You have to have that fire belly, something that makes you get out of bed in the morning, happy to get out of bed in the morning, right?
Because, you know, the world and corporate America can really, it can put a beating on you. And if you don't enjoy what you do, right, that's what will keep you coming back, you know, the next day, waking up in the morning, you know, being able to take the abuse, or just the no, right, that you hear constantly when you're in sales, you know, not being afraid to hear the word no.
Yeah, you got to fight through that. So, how'd you get your start in sales? What's the story
So
there?
it's actually kind of accidental. My last year of engineering school, I'm working on my master's degree, and this is a crazy story. My best friend and I saw that Johnson Controls was interviewing, and you got a free trip to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to go on these interviews, right? It's like, wow, you know, let's go to Milwaukee. So we traveled out to Milwaukee, and we both interviewed to be sales engineers with Johnson Controls, selling building automation and temperature control systems, of which I had no idea what it was until I, you know, read about it on the plane. Went to the interviews, round robin interviews, and did extremely well with the interview process. So did my friend John. He took a different path than I did. He went to work at Goldman Sachs, and I stayed in, you know, on the career path that I was on. Was offered a job and took the job with JCI out of college as a sales engineer, and really got to learn, you know, a lot about myself, and really was able to build a solid foundation, because, you know, I'm a firm believer in not knowing. I don't know everything, and that's why I think I ask a lot of questions, but I know who to ask the questions of. So I'm extremely resourceful. So when I got out of college, there was a gentleman named Neil Eccles that I worked with, and Neil kind of took me. He was a couple years older than I was and am. Took me under his wing, and you know, was kind of, we'll call it like my godfather of sorts, you know, in business in the beginning. And
That's
you know,
such a
because when you get
gift.
it is, yeah, he was a tremendous mentor. And after I became really, really good friends with Neil, That relationship continues. This is 22 years ago. It continues till today. Neil and I have gone separate ways, but I always knew that as I advanced my career, I didn't know everything, and there was a lot that I would need to learn, right? And so, again, I said I like to ask questions. So all I did is ask questions until I found my next mentor. And I've been mentored by unbelievable talent over my career. Grant Neave was another one. I worked with him at Schneider Electric. I learned so much from him. Ron Posner, another guy I worked side by side, and Ron's like an industry giant in the security sales business. And then all the guys that I work with today, I've learned so much from my colleagues. And even people that worked for me, right, as a that reported into me. I had the opportunity when I worked at Schneider Electric of running a team that were focused on consulting engineering firms and construction managers for North America, selling all of Schneider Electric services. And there were guys on my team that were older, right? They'd been working longer than I had been alive. And I learned so much from them.
You think about the pain that they've saved you, by them imparting this knowledge to you. Just that it truly is a gift when you have people like that lifting you up, and helping you along your journey.
And because so many people have helped me, I think that's when I made the shift into like becoming a coach, right? Focusing on developing people. I absolutely love doing that.
Is that what's behind your decision to move into leadership? Is that role of a coach?
There was a point in time actually in my career where I was working at Johnson Controls. I had left Johnson Controls to go to work for what became Schneider Electric. It was Andover Controls, but they got acquired. I learned a lot about mergers and acquisitions at that point too. But I actually wanted to quit engineering, sales, and go and work in a gym. And I remember telling my father that, and he said, basically, are you nuts? And he said, what do you want to do? Like, stack weights? Or my dad didn't go to a gym. That like the idea is so foreign to him. And I said, no, I like to work with people and get them to overcome a challenge, right? Or attain a goal. And as I kind of coached myself through the idea of going to work at a gym or open a gym, my father was like, how about you stick to your day job and work out as much as you want? And I actually talked myself into, wait a second, I can do what I really love doing, but just not in a gym. I can do it in corporate America. And that's when I really got into focusing on leadership and really coaching people and helping to develop people.
Was that an easy transition for you into leadership, or were there some hard lessons for you to learn?
The hardest lesson to learn was not automatically. So I have an interesting way of working on people development. At least I've been told. I again, because I like to ask questions, I just ask questions and try to get the person to reason themselves through whatever issue they're facing, or whatever challenges is in front of them. Because and I think this comes from being an engineering graduate. When you go to engineering school, like you learn a tremendous amount, right? It's like calculus, thermodynamics, but really what they're doing is they're teaching you like a logical thought process, right? How to solve problems. It's just problem solving. So I think it started with engineering school, and I've applied that method to coaching people. It's teaching people how to solve their own problems because, if I win the lottery or, I decide I want to open a gym or, become a cryptocurrency billionaire, I might not be here anymore. And those people, I would always want for them, to be able to function on their own, right? Function and be wildly successful, right, on their own.
Yeah, no, that's great. What keeps you motivated today as a leader? Because at times can be tough when you're, towards the top of the ladder. There's good days and bad days. On those bad days, what keeps you going?
Yeah, you know what? I think the bad days are what keep you going.
Really? Tell me about that.
There's the curse of hearing yes too much, and you get a false sense of expectation. So I think, it's good to get knocked down a peg, because I used to watch a lot of movies, but like I always think of the movie, like the Rocky movie. You have to stand back up, right, and face the challenge, whatever it is, in an hour or tomorrow or at 10 p.m. because we've at our company we've got a workforce that oversees in India, and basically our workday is never it's never never starts and it never ends. So you have to be ready, for the challenge when you get the call. So I think the bad days or the negative experiences are what keep you motivated.
Yeah.
If it became too easy, I don't think I'd want to do this.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's like we all have to be challenged, we got to be pushed to grow. I think that's the thing. It's like if you're not being challenged, you're not growing and you're stagnant, you're stuck in the mud. Even if it might feel good for a little while, after a while, you're stuck in the mud.
So like, I've tough times, right? How the saying goes about tough times, right? It's like you need to face tough times. You need challenge because again, it sharpens you as a person. And it also saves all of your colleagues from learning the lesson that you've learned by encountering the challenge.
Right. What's your favorite part about being a leader?
My and it's as simple as seeing someone advance past where I am. Like this is going to sound incredibly odd, but I don't want to say I love when people quit, right? Because I'd love for people to stay with me forever and right. But if I can see somebody that's worked on a team or worked with me, they have an opportunity, because we know corporate America is a pyramid, right? Like there's only a few spots at the top. But, if there's an opportunity that opens up to them and they feel that they can go and take the challenge, like to me that means a lot, right? It means that my job as a leader, my job as a coach is to make sure that their career continues on. It's not to make sure that I hold them in a, some sort of prison, right? At Albert Weiss or when I worked at Schneider Electric, right? That wasn't my job. My job was to make sure that, again, it's people management, right? It's can and then ultimately to see them excel, right? To me, that really is the to me the that's the cherry on top, right? It is seeing someone else's success and not being envious of it.
As a leader, when do you know it's time for you to move on?
I think it goes back to what I said, if things start to become too easy, you don't wake up and you're not challenged by the day, right? So, I've for whatever reason, I think the economic climate, there's some issues within in contracting in our territory, cash flows are a problem. And there's companies that are filing for bankruptcy, I became our legal expert, on hunting down payables receivables. Sorry, is it something that I wanted to do? No. Is it something that was necessary that we do it? Right, a cash flow is king. So because no one else could do it, was willing to do it, like it was a responsibility that I just took on. And again, I said I like to learn. So
Yeah. I
I
imagine
you
you're
know I
learning
dreamed.
quite a bit with, so Albert Weiss is going through some major changes. Talk to me about, how those changes have impacted you in your role as COO and being over sales.
Sure. So so we've tripled the company in size in 2 years,
Yeah,
right?
which is crazy.
And that, by the way, that was pre-pandemic levels. We went back to the best year we've ever had, and we've tripled in size. And by the way, that's something to me that's exciting. I don't
Oh,
like
yeah.
incremental growth, right? Like incremental growth, oh, we did, 5, 8, 10% last year. Who cares? Right. It's like, that's not, to me, that's, I don't know. I think you're doing what everybody else is doing. I want to take market share because I'm competitive, right? I know who my list of enemies are. And I want to go out and take market share from them. So that's something that that keeps me focused. What's been challenging here is because we're really a small business, right? It was looking at, again, doing the initial assessment of the company and looking and saying, wow, they've got really, really, really good bones. 65 years in business, right? Reputation is unbelievable in New York with the construction community. Almost too good, right? You're almost a prisoner of your own success because for so long, customers have relied on us for this one or two specific services. For us to branch out into other things, there's a little bit of a reluctancy by the customers to exercise, those services from us. So it was looking, the first thing was to, after doing that assessment was, where do we go first in order to grow our, our offer? And we identified, a pathway to do so, which was adding a couple of different manufacturers, like adjacent services, services that we felt like could make us more of a natural competitor to our competitors in New York. So we went and added a bunch of those lines, but really having to be disciplined, because when you're in a small business and, we're so lucky to work in New York, the economic climate has kind of been insulated a lot from, the, I'll call it the last 15 years, 16 years, right? Since 08, was to be disciplined and to make sure that myself and my partners, we remain totally disciplined with our growth strategy. We outperformed our growth plan for the first year and the second year, which is fantastic. But it's not, the growth isn't out of our control, right? We're still able to control the growth.
Can you talk
Remaining
about that for a second? Because a lot of, that's not something I hear a lot. And so when you say you're able to control the growth, talk to me about that. What does that mean?
So we thought that within 2 years we would be able to double the size of the company, right? And we would have to add additional resources, our back office to supplement, being able to deliver on those promises, right? Because our business is, I guess it kind of boils down to logistics, right? We take things from a manufacturer by resell and we move them to, a job site. So, we're on the construction value chain, and you cannot, especially in this market in New York, you cannot afford to make mistakes, right? And usually those mistakes are extremely costly, and that's just missing a shipping deadline. So we were able to build a back office to be able to support our salespeople. Allowing our salespeople to spend a tremendous amount of time with with their customers. So we
Right.
kind of we you know leading and lagging indicators, right? Our leading indicators were our bookings, and we planned for it as the growth was taking place. When we got into execution, and that came from, the guys that I work with. The number of years of experience range from 65 years of experience. So our president, Frank Ciampa, has 65 years of experience. He was employee number two at this company.
Wow.
And Frank's in the office 3 days a week, and talk about somebody that's motivated, right? Like Frank is, the guy's he's a gem. The guy's a gem. I can't say anything about him. And then, down to, the guy with the least experience is 10 years, right? So it's leveraging on all of that experience to be able to plan to deliver, right? Because if you stumble, it's very, very hard to recover. And we're risking, right, the brand equity of all of the different manufacturers that we represent, right? And that, making sure that we pay attention to that. And are cognizant of it, because those brands have worked extremely hard to build up their brand equity, so we want to protect that as best we can.
Now, is selling as a rep different from selling from a company where maybe it's your own products that you're selling? And if it's different, can you tell me how?
So we actually do both, right? We have a service business. So, and these are our own employees going out and servicing a customer base. You're in direct control of those assets, right? Those assets. And you can make snap decisions to say, hey, wait a second. We need to deploy resources to this customer. And we've already talked to this other customer and basically reset their expectations. It's very, very difficult when, we've got, we'll call it a dozen manufacturers that we represent, to have to get the manufacturers to understand the challenge as you see it directly with your customer, because you're their customer, but their customer, right? Your customer is not their customer. A lot of manufacturers would say that, right? So that, I think that their communication would stop with the with the rep. And the reason we've been successful, and I'll use a company called Anemistat. They're an air distribution manufacturer. They're headquartered out in Carson, California, and they are, in my experience, in my entire career, they provide what we call the white glove service to their reps. There's a gentleman there named Marvin, Marvin Melendez. He runs manufacturing, and it was just last week. There was a product we didn't even have it on order on Wednesday. Okay, lead time usually on these things is 10 days. We're their largest rep in the country, so this helps. Made a call to Marvin at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Less than 24 hours have passed. And on Thursday evening, they were packed, shipped overnighted to our customer to be installed. So that way this massive law firm could occupy their space on Monday morning, and no one was hit with any back charges. So we're firm believers in having relationships with the manufacturers and having them understand things as we see it, right? And we can't always make our emergency their emergency, but when we do, we're always able to collect on the favors because we do so well with a lot of our manufacturers. So it's delivering for them so that they're inclined to want to deliver for us.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I like that. I like how you said that.
And Anemistat, they're kind of going through an evolution too. For years, I worked with them for 2 years, because I've been with this company for 2 years, and I would say that they do four things unbelievably well, right? And once you get out into corporate America, there's so many levers people are focused on. And an hemostat does four things: they listen, they build, they deliver, and they satisfy. That's all they're focused on. And it works.
I tell you that those should be the four things every business does, right? I mean, holy cow,
Yeah.
listening is a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, you break that down, that's like, hey, that's your recipe for success right there. You got four things.
It so yeah, you know, I'm a firm believer in oversimplifying things so much so that even I can understand them, right? And that's a little bit of a dig at myself. It's a little self-deprecating humor, but no one likes to make simple things complex.
Right.
And I have never met anyone that likes to make complex things even more complex, right? It's simplify, simplify, so you can get to a solution.
We have a client where the owners of the business, we're talking to them about their technical infrastructure and their business process and all that. And one of the owners was like, you know, Chris, our business is not complicated. The mistake we made is we made it complicated. Thinking we're making it better, we actually made it way more complicated than it needs to. We just need to get back to simple. And I think that's something that to have that level of introspection, to be able to see that and recognize it and then act on it is critical to really moving things forward.
You only have 24 hours in a day, right? And if you
Yeah.
add all this extraneous information or extraneous needs to find things out that aren't ultimately going to help you make a decision, I don't want to say it this casually, but it's a waste of time.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Shifting the conversation a bit, CRM, do you love it or
Sure.
do you hate it?
I'm a big believer in data, right? I'm a big, big, big believer in data and having data and making informed decisions, right? You can't, when I got married, I trusted my gut and my heart, right? I proposed to my wife and I was like, I didn't have any data, right? It was just what was here and what was here, right?
If you
You
had
can't
data,
do
you
that
probably
anymore.
would have gotten hit upside the head with the data.
Yeah. My wife and I joke about it. We dated for a long time before we got engaged, and then ultimately, we got married. So I had plenty of experience data, but I didn't have a log of it, right? But my experience working at JCI, at Schneider Electric, I've used all different types of CRMs, from the enterprise level, best in the business to what we use now is actually something we've developed in-house, our own software. And like I said, I'm all about trying to make the complex simple.
Yep.
It has just the information that we need, and there's modules that we're able to build onto if there's a metric, right, that we want to be cognizant of. And so we're trying to build it that way. And some of our customers have actually they've subscribed to use our own CRM. It tells you a CRM can tell you what you should know and be aware of, and what you should be using as a business leader to make decisions. If you're not making data-driven decisions, I don't want to work at your company.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. If you had a magic wand, if there was something you could change about the CRM you have today, how would you use that magic wand?
It would be about the user interface. It's a bit clunky, right? Because it was developed in-house. I've seen a lot of these in-house, even manufacturers, they try to develop their own software, and they're not software people, right? They're manufacturers of products. And I'm not a computer engineer, but we hired a bunch of people to build it for us. And that's what's really challenging about software development, is that I have to communicate something from here, put it into words, And again, I'm going to have an image in my head of exactly what I want this thing to look like, right? But what gets lost is it, from here to here, and then ultimately what the, the consultant or the developer will infer from, the functional requirements what we have put together. And really the user experience ultimately I've always seen is what gets lost, right? That it, especially with large corporations, they're so focused on I need more and more and more and more and more data, because manufacturing might need the data, or sales might need the data, or marketing might need the data, and it's different. There are different swaths of data, right? They're of different importance to people, so then you'd have a whole bunch of salespeople going and chasing data around, and they forget about, wait a second, I actually have to sell the service or the product. So it's tempering, with enterprise levels, it would be about tempering really what data is important and going to be used for decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Everything else you can jettison. When a frontline salesperson in your team, is looking at your CRM, is that something they look at in terms of, hey, this is really helping me, it's enabling to do my job? Or do they look at it in terms of, yeah, this is just something I have to do because my boss is making me?
So the way we built the software, the frontline salesperson cannot do their job without the software, right? So it's a CRM, but it's also an operations tool, right? So we are enabling, so we'll call it our enabling services team. Our back office, which works on order execution, uses the software to execute our projects, and then ultimately follow up for service, warranty information. Our bidding process is it's all plugged in, and it's end to end, right? And so that drives user adoption, right? Is you basically you can't do your job without it. And that's kind of what was missing from, a lot of the CRMs that were rolled out, I'll call it a dozen, 15 years ago. The enterprise level ones is that, okay, well, we have this CRM and we're gathering all this data, and wait a second, it's not connected to manufacturing, and it's not connected to project management, and it's not connected to estimating. If it's an end-to-end software, whereas as a salesperson, right, everything starts with, with you, and it ends when something goes into warranty or into to service, and if it can continue on this project life cycle, right, from design to turnover to ownership, it would drive adoption rate. We had an issue at Schneider Electric where Schneider had kept acquiring companies, right? So they acquired Square D, they acquired Pelco, they acquired TAC. I mean, there's so many acquisitions, and they were using a certain CRM. Enterprise level CRM, and the adoption rates, it was amazing, because I was like on the committee to, make sure that there was a adoption. The adoption rate was very, very high, right? I was a power user of the software, and the adoption rates of some of the different companies were it was outlandish. I mean, like 10% of a workforce of a company that they paid several billion dollars for was using Salesforce, and they got a stern talking to by the director of North American operations about their adoption rate.
No, it's always a challenge. It's always a challenge for CRMs if it's not really helping you. So, Chris, we're at our time here for this episode of Sales Lead Dog. I really appreciate you coming on. People want to reach out. They want to connect with you. They want to learn more about Albert Weiss. What's the best way for them to do that?
I mean, the best way is I'm on LinkedIn. Is to connect with me on LinkedIn. Our company, Albert Weiss, is on LinkedIn. Please feel free, email, call. Call my cell phone. All of my contact information is on there. As I said, when this started, I'm like an open book. I look forward to hearing from whoever in the audience wants to reach out. If I can talk to them more about my experience, I'd be more than happy to do so.
That's great. That's very generous. Well, Chris, thanks again for coming on Sales Lead Dog and welcome to the Sales Lead Dog Pack.
Chris, thanks so much for having me. It was an interesting experience.
Great.
As we end this discussion on Sales Lead Dog, be sure to subscribe to catch all our episodes. On social media, follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Watch the videos on YouTube. And you can also find our episodes on our website at impellercrm.com/saleslead dog. Sales Lead Dog is supported by Impeller CRM, delivering objectively better CRM for business, guaranteed.